This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytech, brings you Blowing Bubbles. Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world. How are people living their bubble lives? Working from home, keeping kids entertained, and staying connected and getting exercise. And how are these things presenting us with the opportunities to find new ways of living? Every weekday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann, Shan Gallagher, and Mara Karatai reach out from their bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world. Broadcast on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz and sustainablelens.org, bringing connection, joy, kindness and peace in the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann. I'm not in Sawyers Bay. I am in Hyderabad. And I am with Dr. Swaroop Joshi and Partha. They are from BITS, Palana, KK Birla. That's the campus in
Goa campus.
In Goa. We're at the Comp Ed 23, a computing education conference. We'll talk a bit about some of that. Welcome, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Sam. Thanks for inviting us here.
So we're going to do a bit of a double act. So I'm not, we won't do every question for both of you, but I think with this first one we will do. Where did you grow up?
I was born in Nagpur, which is a city sort of at the center of India. And I grew up, like I did all my schooling there. It's a medium to small-ish town in India, with about 3 million population now. Largely,
that's tiny.
Yeah, it's tiny in India. Yeah, with largely Marathi speaking. Marathi is one of the languages which has about 90 million speakers across the world. Yeah, that's where I grew up. Thank you.
And what did you want to be when you grew up?
I didn't know. It would change every week, probably. So, but yeah, at some point I realized I want to be a teacher, and I'm glad I am one now. Yeah.
Cool. And Partha, where'd you grow up?
Yeah, so I was born in Coimbatore, which is a place in Tamil Nadu. But I was just born there, but I grew up in Bangalore. And so maybe 100, 200 years back, my family had migrated to this place, which is another state in India. And I basically did my schooling and all of those, and even now I'm residing in Bangalore.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you're both in Goa? Is that how you describe where you're from? Is Goa the town? Is it all Goa the okay. district?
Yeah. So Goa is a state, one of the smallest states in India. The population is less than or around the city I mentioned. So, you know, state versus that city. It's on the west coast of India. It's probably more known to your audience as one of the beach destinations, and it has only two districts, so relatively very small state. So, you know, instead of saying the town name, we usually just say we are in Goa. Yeah, unlike the other places.
And what do you do there?
So I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Computer Science and Information Systems at BITS Pilani, the KK Birla Goa campus.
Yeah, so I am heading from Bangalore, and I am currently working with Salesforce as an accessibility engineer. And there's also an interesting story on how I came into the field. Yeah, so I was typically into software engineering. I've done a lot of software development, and there are a couple of instances which made me move to this field. And the first one was there was a very big event. It was a tech conference similar to Comped, but it was a very huge, large-scale event. And so that is where there was an instance where I had been in the coordination team. And in that particular event, I saw a person with disability, and we were conducting an event which was not very accessible. And I couldn't do much. I was just, having a chat, but that was the first instance. And the second instance, there was a time where I personally met with an accident. Yeah, and there was a time where I had a lot of, you know, plates, operation and so on, and I was not working like full time, you know, all the day, but I was still occupied, and I wanted to work for a while because I got bored. And that is the first time I realized that I was completely unexposed to what assistive technologies are, accessibility is. So I wanted to code, but I was not able to type because I had some bandages and, you know, fractures in my hand. And then I realized, okay, I could use a screen reader, but I did not even know how to use it. And I had done professional software development for quite some time, and I have never used all these. Right? And that was the second instance where I started learning about it. So I started becoming a self-learned expert on it. And I started contributing in this field slowly. And the third thing was, I then started, you know, exploring about, I've done all my education in premium places in India. I'm working in one of the good companies. And at that time I was not in Salesforce. And I realized that I'm still not aware about it, but what about, you know, the general public? And I went around and, you know, met a lot of NGOs which have people with disabilities. And a common statement that I used to get was, you know, digital things are not for us. And in India, that is also associated with a lot of other societal factors like poverty, unemployment, and all those aspects. And that is when I realized that, so a lot of people, life happens, you earn good in the software industry, life happens, but you don't even know your purpose, right? But for a very small number of people, the purpose finds you. And that is when I thought, I'm one among millions of software engineers who does regular software development, but this is something that I want to do. And I started doing accessibility for some portion, and that is when I also met Dr. Swarup. I was very inclined that accessibility, software engineering, this is the field that I want to, otherwise I will not do any research or, you know, things like that. I'll just do, you know, what I can in this field. And in the industry, I was doing this work. But again, destiny, it all came together, and that's when, so he was not at that time in BITS Pilani Goa campus. And once he joined the campus, he had the very exact similar idea around accessibility, inclusivity, and so on. And the moment I saw it, I just, you know, shoot an email that, you know, let's catch up, you know, this is what I do, and this is what you intend to do, so, you know, let's do this, and that's how the whole journey started. Yeah.
Sounds like a match made.
Yeah.
Right.
What led you to a disability space or accessibility space?
So, I mean, my primary interest was in computing education research, or broadly education research. I joined BITS Pilani about 3 years back, and after joining, when I was preparing for my seed grant and, you know, what kind of research I want to start doing, what kind of profile I want to build, I was looking at something different from the general CSED research. Disabilities and accessibility, I would say, has been at the back of my mind for all my life. So I grew up around some very important people who were disabled. My neighbors, some of my relatives, and although I didn't think about it, you just grow up around different people. But these people have a much deeper impact on my life than I think I realize. When I was a grad student at Ohio State, I also came across some NSF-funded projects which exposed me to the concept of accessibility in computing in general, and the lack of accessibility education. So some programs at UW, the Teach Access Movement, I had attended some conferences or, you know, workshops with them. So all of that came together when I had to sit down and write my seed grant proposal. So that's how it started. I had written that proposal. The institute was you know, kind enough to give me a go ahead. And around the same time, Partha, as I said, he applied for the grad school or the PhD program. And then we started talking, we started working on this. We are exploring this space, particularly in India, because I think there is overall little work, but there is some work in US, Europe, some other parts of the world, but very little work in India. So we have done some study of which computing educators in India, they are teaching accessibility in their regular courses. You know, what does the industry think about accessibility issues in software development? By the way, let me just slightly clarify here. So there are two things, teaching accessibility and teaching accessibility. The former means teaching regular computer science courses, but talking about accessibility as a theme or a concept and talking about its relevance to general computing education or software development, which is what we are largely doing. The second one, teaching accessibly, would be making your class material, your class environment accessible to students who have disabilities and need such accommodations. So we are focusing on the former and not on the latter at this point.
Is it a recognized and big thing in India? For most of the people coming from the global north are surprised at the state of your footpaths, which essentially don't exist.
Right.
It must be very, very difficult for a disabled person in India.
Yes.
But in an area where there's a technical solution, it's worth focusing on.
Right.
My daughter, who's in disability policy, we've had her on the show several times. One of her mantras is that every policy is a disability policy. And I think you probably work on the same basis that every piece of technology is accessible.
Yeah.
Has to work for disabled people.
Right.
But the percentage of that technology which is accessible, I imagine, is much smaller than that.
Yes, that is true. What is interesting is some of the accessibility criteria for web apps or mobile apps are very easy to fix. For example, introducing good color contrast in your websites, right? And it just, every web developer is kind of doing it. They just have to fix the front font color and the background color to a certain ratio. So it's not conceptually difficult, it's not technically difficult, it's just that people are not aware of this, so they are not doing this. So we get, I think, you know, we have cited this paper or this report at a couple of places. The Web AIM report says more than 95% of world's top 1 million websites' homepages are not accessible. That's staggering. I mean, you know, and it could have such small issues like this, just not enough color contrast. So the issue is not with the technical challenge or you know, any such things. It's about awareness and then the willingness of people to go that extra mile or have that lens of looking at technology as you described. You know, has to be accessible. Otherwise, it's not complete. So, yeah.
There was an interesting paper this afternoon about abolitionist teaching. So actively teaching in a way that overcomes oppression with the idea that that is going to have, we're going to have graduates who will be overcoming all forms of oppression in their professional lives and how they do their work. It's quite a big leap between those two, but
yeah.
And could you see that this not providing services is a form of oppression? And so could you see that the teaching computing students to understand accessibility is in the same mold as that?
Okay. So I could not attend that session because there was a parallel session and I was in another one. So I'm not really familiar with the framework that they are working on, but largely I agree with the concept that we take a lot of things for granted. So what I learned in my undergraduate kind of permeates to what I will be teaching. Yes, there are people who make efforts to add new pedagogies, add new resources in addition to new topics, which is another whole thing about, especially about our field. Otherwise, I think these things continue. Like, this is how I was taught. This is the kind of assignments I wrote. So it is okay to continue that. So unless there is a deliberate intervention, the force of this awareness and willingness, as I said before, to think about these topics I don't think the change will happen. I don't know if I answered your question because I wasn't familiar with the framework, but yeah.
That's all right. Let's take the first of your music choices. Let's have Parthas first. What are we having and why do you like this one?
Yeah, so I wanted some calm music from, the chill hop beats. And this is just that, you know, we have had a lengthy day, so it's a relaxation music.
Teaching accessibility is something which we should be weaving all the way through our courses, our programs, and or should it be a separate course on that?
So I think the first one. And there is some work on this going on elsewhere as well. So again, it goes back to, you know, how you think about this. So can there be technology that is not accessible? And if our answer to that is no, then we have to think about teaching accessibility in all CS courses. And interestingly, you know, we have a lot of real world technology examples that started developing as assistive technology or accessibility necessities, but then grew up into mainstream technology. And now perhaps people don't really think about it. A very common, well-known example is closed captions. It is a primary requirement for someone who who has hearing deficiency or, you know, hard of hearing or deaf person. But I love it, especially on the movies and shows for which the accent is different, or if I'm in a loud environment, right? So there are several such examples. We can talk about need of accessibility or integrating accessibility concepts through several other courses. not just front-end development UI-related courses. And in that sense, I think it should be across the board, across the curriculum.
It's interesting that if we think about, there's lots of areas where we say, there's a term, what's good for Maori is good for everybody. And this is a similar case, that it's not going to disadvantage anybody by making something accessible.
Right.
So why isn't it done? Why isn't it obvious? How come we've got one accessibility engineer? Well, I'm sure there's some others, but...
Right. Yeah, I think there are two aspects to this, right? So one is how to do it, and the other point is why do we have to do it? And so the whole curricula, the teaching accessibility thing, is currently tackling the how part of it. How can we teach it? Should it be a separate course? Should we integrate it in other existing courses and so on? But in a lot of places, there is also this question of why, right? So right from, say, K-12 education and so on, we don't have a sensitization about these topics, right? So general awareness about assistive technology and the different ranges of disabilities and, say, the lived experiences of, you know, people with disabilities. So these are lacking, and engineers also don't understand the bigger picture of why I'm trying to do this, right? So there's this typical mindset of, you know what, I'm writing hundreds of test cases and maybe this is yet another, you know, checklist. So I think it is also important to tackle the why part of it, and which is a bigger challenge where, so we are talking about, say, creating empathy and so on, which cannot be taught technically, but somehow that should be the first step, where we create sensitization, awareness, and then that should be followed with the how part of it. And if the why part is very clear, then the other things automatically fall in place.
If I may add to the why part, I think a lot of conversations, you know, around this, they start with, you want to do it for them. I don't see that difference. Not just from a, you know, philosophical viewpoint, but from a very practical viewpoint. My father's generation, or the generation before that, probably could live without technology as they grow older. Which is where a lot of, you know, accessibility accommodation just start showing up because of age and other factors. That's not going to be the same with me. So that's one thing. I mean, you know, 20, 30, 40 years from now, I will need accessibility accommodations to use all sorts of softwares, which are now part of my daily life. I can't live without them. And then there is this another case which Partha shared from his own experiences. Even the short-term disability can affect your day-to-day working significantly.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not a philanthropic viewpoint. It's a, for me, it's a very natural, very normal, you know, this is the use case, a very common sense use case where we should develop software that is accessible.
Yes, Phoebe, another one of Phoebe's statements is that the disability community is the world's largest minority that anybody could be become part of in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And so we should all take it.
Yes.
We should all take it seriously. When you're working on this, Partha, at what stage in the development of a product does it currently happen, and is that the right place for it?
Right. So currently, most organizations take about accessibility at the very fag end of a product, maybe right after the development, maybe during testing, or they even care about after releasing a product and things like that. But the right way to do it is, there's a lot of thought process behind shift left paradigm, where we need to start thinking about accessibility as early as possible, maybe right from the design stage of it, and take it all the way throughout the life cycle. And so I would also go about telling accessibility is a functional aspect, right? So if it is not accessible, it is not functional. It is as simple as that. So I keep comparing security and accessibility. So on one spectrum, you have a product, say suppose it has security vulnerabilities, or it doesn't, you know, have strong security policies, but that is an after effect. People are already using the product, and this could be an after effect. But for accessibility, there is a percentage of users who are not even able to get to the space, right? So they're not able to start using a product. So I think, in my view, if it is not accessible, it is not even a functional ready product.
So I can imagine a group of engineers sitting around and they look in their calendar and they see they've got you coming to see them.
Right.
And they will go, oh no.
Right.
And the same for the people doing sustainability or ethics or any of those sorts of things. How can we not just shift it left, but shift it to a positive, this is adding value, we want to be doing this?
Right. So I think the initial few steps that I have started doing is the why part of it, right? So I believe engineers are talented enough, and these are not very complex guidelines, as we spoke a little while back. So I'm trying to bring in a lot of, say, guest speakers and sensitization activities on why are we doing this and what is the need for this and how important this is in the big picture. And I think that would bring in a positive change in a longer run.
Bubble sprite of the forest of Orokinui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, ngā mihi aroha nui kia koutou, ko tāhu ahau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very tough, and it's so important that we acknowledge this and give ourselves the time, the space, the care, the love, the patience, the support that we so richly deserve and innately can provide. I know for myself, of course, the living world is always a huge comfort, and I've had a wonderful time in the last few days, really, really enjoying the beauty of our paradise home, Oti Porti Stuneden, the textures in the land, the shape of the hills, the flow of the landscape, the many, many different colours that nature is bursting into bloom with at the moment, the sweet nectar in the air, the bird song, the changing light throughout the space of a day, and of course the beauty of our creative energy as it manifests and will manifest in the human world. And for me, I love us as a species. I think that there's so much that we can do and have done that we should feel very proud about, and that we have that innate capacity to nurture and to create and be inspired by the world around us and take our perceptions of the world around us within us. And by doing so, create something new each time. It's really a beautiful, miraculous process that we're all part of, that we're all capable of. And by nurturing these capacities within ourselves and each other, I feel that we bring forth that best aspect of ourselves, that inner nurturer. So I've been very lucky over the last few days to be interacting with lots of wonderful people at my heart's home, Orokinui Eco Sanctuary. I really enjoyed giving a talk to the City Sanctuary volunteers, who of course are out there in the community doing a lot of trapping at the moment in our wild spaces in the city, like the town belt, like their backyards, anywhere where that predator control is needing to be established and maintained. These are the volunteers that are doing it. So of course I thank them all for being born and bringing their unique skills and gifts with them into this lucky world. And I thanked them for doing this hard work, which is at this time in our evolution, our co-evolution with all life, we're having to really prioritise our native species, and we're having to humanely trap and kill these non-native predators, which of course is really sad. And I spoke about that and said, you know, how sad it is to have to kill anything. You know, of course it's really, really sad. But where we're at now, we're laying the foundations for a predator-free future. We're laying the foundations to take down the fence of defence at Orokinui Eco Sanctuary, because everywhere is safe. And what a comfort it is for me, after 14 years of being at Orokinui, that I know that when the kaka fly out, when the kākārua, the South Island robin, fly out, you know, they're safer now than they have ever been because of this trapping that's going on, you know, and how wonderful that is, and how grateful I am to everybody. And of course that we're all one, we're all part of this very long-term project, life, you know, and we're all contributing something very valuable, whether we're conscious of it or not. Everything connects, everything is connected, everything that we do has an impact, everything we do makes a difference. And as Jane Goodall said, we have to choose the kind of difference we want to make. We are in control of that, which is fantastic. So I really hope for you, you are appreciating the impact that you're having on the world around you, that you are appreciating the beauty that you bring to this world, your unique skills and gifts, and that you're also able to see how you are relating to the world around you, always in relationship, that that beauty within you is being mirrored back to you by the paradise that surrounds you. So, of course, I want to say a big thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me, and I'll talk to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
If just to add to this, you know, I've also heard this a lot from the disabled community, that it's not actually the person who is disabled, it is the environment that is disabling.
Right.
So that viewpoint is also, you know, very interesting and important. So if, for example, you know, we are teleported to a planet where all communication is through a totally different medium, right? Maybe just touch or some waves that we can't even think about with our five senses, we are all disabled there, right? So then the environment has to be made accessible. It's not my fault that I cannot perceive that particular way of communication. It's just that the environment is not accommodating enough. So this viewpoint also puts a different lens on how we look at the softwares or products that we are developing, and gives me a perspective that I should be creating software that is accommodating to different people's needs, including someone with disability.
There must be a limit, at least a theoretical limit, of these particular disabilities. Yeah, we'd like to, but we just can't do it.
It could be, but right now we are at the total different end of the spectrum. So
we're not doing the easy stuff.
I'm not even thinking about the theoretical limits right now. Let's at least get those things done that are easy to do and that could address the needs of a large population within this, you know, the big minority. Yeah.
So, Patha, you're developing games?
Right.
Why's that?
So, I'm currently creating some serious games which will try to tackle all of these points that we, you know, spoke about. So, the first part of the game I'm envisioning is the why part of it, right? So, the player would be put into a lot of tasks, where the player of the game understands the various accessibility barriers and so on. And progressively the game will teach them about web content accessibility guidelines. And the final stage of the game would put all this into action, where the player has to identify certain accessibility issues and tries to fix them, right? So this is more like a serious game where it is not just for entertainment. It is, of course, a digital entertaining game, but there is an underlying purpose to this, and we envision to put it on the web, and it is not just for computing students. As we spoke, it is the first few stages is absolutely required even if someone is not a software developer. So I think that is what I'm currently working on.
What do you think the ratio is of, I was going to say normal programmers to accessibility programmers, but maybe it's the wrong question, because maybe it should be that every programmer is a accessibility.
Exactly.
But you don't want to do yourself out of a job.
I'm sorry, I didn't get the question.
You don't want to do, you want there to be some accessibility engineers who are specialized in it?
Yeah. Right. Right. I think, and I mean, that's okay, right? We have security experts in the organization. So, you know, if you think of these specialized layers over the mainstream coding software development, that is fine. But at the same time, someone who is working on a product that has even basic security needs, that quote-unquote normal software developer would not be totally unaware of security concepts, which is sort of what we are seeing in the accessibility scenario. Like, you know, there are people who are developing software, and maybe then there is a software, accessibility expert who will come and fix all the other things, right? So probably we need to kind of make that incremental change at every stage. In Partha's research project, the primary focus is on undergraduate students and existing software developers. So the problem we have identified, and that's not the only problem for not having software that is accessible, but we believe that is one of the major problems, that we don't teach about accessibility in our regular typical four-year courses, not to a good extent at least, okay, if not, not an absolute no. So how do we engage these undergrad students and current working professionals and get them interested in the ideas of accessible software development? That's why we are using games as a vehicle. Game-based learning has proved to be effective in engagement, in learning, and so on. So that's where we are right now.
Is the game accessible?
To a certain extent, but we do have certain parts of the game which is wantedly created to be inaccessible, because we want to make the player understand the impacts of it, of inaccessible software, and they would have to fix that to make it accessible. So that's a part of the game, and that is what we envision.
I was going to come up with an argument that it was getting easier to do accessibility, but then I've just convinced myself that it might be getting harder to do accessibility as we move to things like the Internet of Things and augmented reality and so on.
Right.
So maybe I'll turn that into a question. Is it getting easier or harder to do accessibility as the range of interfaces gets wider and smaller and more specialized and less text-based?
It is getting harder. So there is also a good amount of research questions on the whole human computing interaction part, right? So we still are not very clear about what are the different modalities which human beings use to communicate with computing, and right, with websites we have all these issues, and with AR, VR and IoT and such technologies we have very little data about how are people using this, and also about their user engagement, the satisfaction levels. And in particular, people with disabilities and their usage of these technologies. So that is not yet very clear. And of course, it is an accessibility challenge. It is getting harder. And our web content accessibility guidelines, the premise of that is preliminarily websites, web pages, and mobile applications. And there is very little guidelines surrounding around, say, augmented reality and such things. There are initiatives, the whole WCAG is also getting revamped, but we're still not yet there.
I'll just add one more point. I mean, it's in some cases, it's also getting easier. For example, you know, Alexa and devices like that are now a household thing. So the text interface and, you know, limitations with that have gone. People can talk to it without worrying about typing anything, also talk to it in different languages. So in some cases, it is easier.
So is AI helping in that regard?
Yes, I think so, yeah.
Let's take the second of your music choices.
Okay.
Swarup, what's yours?
Yes. Okay, so this is something that's from my, you know, childhood memories. So, okay, I'll first give you the title. It's called Baje Saragam. You can spell it in B-A-J-E-S-A-R-A-G-A-M. Used to be a national integrity video song on the national television in India. What I like about it is it showcases different cultures, different songs, different dances, different art forms of India, weaved in the same raga, which is a classical Indian music theme, and there are hundreds of those, called a Desarag. The Desarag itself has very positive vibes. So, you know, it used to be a nice thing. It would just show up in the middle of two shows, and you would love watching it.
Some questions to end the show, and we've not got very much time, and there's two of you, so we're going to have to kind of juggle and wiggle.
Sure.
What's the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years? You can both answer this one.
How do you define success?
It's whatever you feel has been a success. All of these questions are ill-defined on the basis that it's a free hit. You can answer it in any way you like.
Okay. I mean, for me personally, so a little bit of my life story. You know, I did my high school in Nagpur, moved to an engineering college in another part of the country, worked for a little bit in software industry, then did my master's, then went for PhD to United States, and always wanted to come back, be at a good institute, and that journey back took some more time than I thought. And then there was COVID, there were other questions at that particular stage in your life. So finally managed to come back. I think that is a success in the current times. Yeah, and I'm quite happy with the transition. It took a while to get back and just settle down.
Yeah,
Yeah, I think for me that is something that I always envision to do. So success is, basically to have fun and, to be happy with what I wanted to do. So that's exactly what I'm currently doing. So in one side, I, do accessibility that is, as full time now. So, and also the research part exactly woven into the same thing. And so initially before joining a research program and so on, I was a little, I used to constantly hear feedback about, 6-8 years of, a lot of things. And it will be very, stressful and a lot of things be grueling and, things like that. But I think it's not that bad. And it is, if we go...
Sitting next to
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Asterisks.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the footnote.
Right.
If you wiggle a bit further away and then say it again.
No, I think it's all about having, fun and enjoying the, field. And I'm in the right field and I really enjoy this. And I think that's the... And also in the whole field of accessibility, I have been able to slowly bring in some changes and moving the tide. And that is what I consider in the last couple of years.
So we're writing a book of these conversations. It's called Tomorrow's Heroes. It's our team of people doing good work. So you're both in that team. What I want to know is, what is your superpower? but I want you to think of your own superpower and then tell me what the other person's superpower is, and then you can see if they got it right. So you thought of your own?
Yes.
Good. Okay. What's their superpower?
Right. I mean, I think I have a very good ability to listen to people.
Not yours. What's his?
Oh, his. Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah.
Sorry, I misunderstood a bit. So I don't have a good ability to listen, apparently. Yeah. Okay. So Partha's superpower, from what I have observed in the past two and a half years, is he is very enthusiastic about what he is doing. He understands the space of the problem at a broad and deeper level than you know, I would have expected, honestly. Yeah, I mean, not for him, but in general, you know, grad students entering, etc. So yeah, and that has really helped not just his project, but the entire research group in general. Yeah, so other research scholars, other undergrads that work with us have benefited because of Partha. Yes.
Partha, what's this?
Yeah, the first thing would be clarity on what you know, he's doing, right? It's not like, you know, having 20 things and, you know, not progressing in any of them. So he's very focused on one step at a time. Let's do that good and then go to the next step and so on. So that's his superpower, and that focus helps our whole group as well as, you know, our institute, our careers and so on. And I think that's his superpower.
Did you both get it right? You were going to say something about listening.
Yeah. And I demonstrated I was wrong about that. So, yeah, let's not go there.
So it's listening and clarity.
Yeah.
Partha, did you get it right?
Yeah, of course.
You have to say that. So do you consider yourself to be an activist?
I'm a little wary of the term because of certain connotations associated with it. I'm certainly committed to the cause, that I would say.
So maybe more like an accessibility advocate or accessibility ally, I would consider something like that. And maybe like a big wish list or something. Say, let's suppose, say, 100 years from now, and if someone Googles my name, right? So they should be seeing something like, yeah, he fighted for inclusion, access, and, you know, computing, ethics, and, you know, in the intersections of these, and that is what he worked and, you know, wished for. Right, so that is what someone should, you know, see.
That comes with an assumption that Google stays for 100 years.
Right.
But it's turned into a verb, so maybe that'll stick.
Yes, right. Yes.
So what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
The ikigai for me is the things that I do daily, yeah. So that pays me and I enjoy doing that. And I think that motivates me to do this every day, yeah.
Cool.
I like what I do, not just work-wise, but, you know, everything. Spending time with my family. So for that, I need to get my things done. The other things done. I do some, you know, volunteering, etc. as well. So managing all of that in a timely manner such that it does not impact the other aspects, so that I can be happy at the end of the day.
So, right.
So what is the biggest challenge or opportunity that you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
So there are very interesting conversations about computing education research tying with the social context, particularly in India. So accessibility is one of them. And by the way, we didn't really touch this, which is okay, but accessibility in a slightly broader sense also involves the other diversity we have in India, the linguistic diversity, the literacy, other social issues, right? India recently completed 75 years of independence, and there is a lot of conversation and push about having systems that reflect the ethos of the country, the society. Computing education research, or in general computing education, will somewhere intersect with this. And I think there is an opportunity and challenge which I would like to get to work on. Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's possible to put it in a percentage terms, but to what percent do you think that the computing education that people are getting in India, at least in terms of curriculum, is the same as what they might be getting in the Midwest of the States?
Yes.
Is it the same thing?
Yeah, at least the conversations are completely, 100% aligned with what we are seeing in the West. So maybe we want to start that conversation if it's not there. Let me just add, I'm not aware of such conversations so far. I hope there are some other people who are doing it.
It'll be very interesting to think that there might be not just India-specific ways of teaching and things to be taught, but also that regional variation.
Yes. Yeah. Right. There are lots
because,
of...
Because there might be that in Goa there's a particular story that this is the genius way of teaching data structures that's just been lost because everyone's teaching the same as they're teaching in San Jose.
Right. Yeah, so lots of cultural, even cultural examples, stories, contexts are largely missing. We could perhaps start there and then eventually reach to the whole worldview about what we are teaching, learning, and why we are teaching, learning the way we are. Right. So the challenges of the Indian society with respect to technology, big data, and all are perhaps different from some other places, right? So we first need to understand those, distinguish those, and then be able to address those.
Partha, challenge?
Challenges? I think we have spoken this several times about, computing education research in India, right? So this is still a very nascent stage. And we're still a small community, I would consider, considering the number of universities and researchers in India. And my challenge is to get people together and get going, right? So in a lot of conferences, I meet a lot of people and we're all enthusiastic about, going back and, doing great things. But a lot of times, what is lacking is we get busy with our own things. And I think getting this community bigger and bigger and continuing to do work on these intersections and at the context of India is something that I look forward in the next year. But it is of course challenging with my past few years. I've been not able to do that, but that is something that I look forward to do in the next years.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Be an inclusion ally, yeah.
Yeah. Broadening that further, the diversity that the nature society world offers to us, I think we need to really understand the nature of the diversity. In my viewpoint, the Indian viewpoint, the diversity emerges out of an inherent unity, and diversity is not manufactured. So that helps me a lot in thinking about these issues and eventually address those.
Just need to unpick that for me. Diversity emerges out of an inherent unity.
Inherent unity. Let's go back into maybe philosophy a little bit. So in the Hindu worldview, right, the world is a manifestation of the same Atman, which can be translated as the essence of being. And it manifests in diverse ways. So it's not that, the plants are different and animals are different. And then we have to create a sense of unity for coexistence. That is not the case. It's It's that there is unity, it just manifests differently. I don't know if I'm able to, you know, put it in a articulate enough way. So how that helps is then you would not exclude anything if you really think at that level. When you are synthesizing unity, you may choose a few ones, the easy ones, the favorite ones perhaps, mm-hmm. and then, you know, create the sense of unity among that subset. But if it's this way, you know, where everything is a manifestation of the same unity in diverse forms, then you have no option to exclude anything.
Is the computer part of that?
Computer should be a part of that, yeah.
Cool.
Yes.
I'm going to have to get you back. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks for having us here. It was a wonderful conversation and great meeting you. Thank you.
Yeah, pleasure is ours. Thank you.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.